runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 135 with guest Susan Bradley. Recorded Sunday, November 1st, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. What's up, Richard?
Not too much, man. We're all dealing with the challenges of life changes and making shows.
Right. This new recording studio, quote-unquote studio, which consists of course, a large and well-clothed walk-in closet, which makes actually for a great recording little system. Kind of had to move, though, because the 15-year-old is taking a shower on the other side of the wall, and that got noisy.
Nice. So now you're in the bedroom.
TMI, I'm sure, but yeah.
Well, we've tried to make the best-sounding show we can, so let's keep going. I'm dealing with the chaos of my house, too. Granted, I'm only home for 24 hours these days, but, you know. Let's dive right into the show. We're talking to Susan Bradley. Susan's been passionate about patch management since he used to patch her SBS 2000 for Code Red and NIMDA. Oh, man.
Yowza.
She writes on the topic for Brian Livingston's Windows Secrets and is an equal opportunity patcher, as she has maintained patches for 5 Windows PCs at home, 2 Macs, and umpteen Windows Exchange and SQL Server machines at the office. She considers visiting the Microsoft Knowledge Base site of KB894199 as perfectly normal and is certain you will too after she tells you why you need to bookmark it. The patches she loves to hate and hates to love are .NET, SQL, and XML. And you can read her topics in the Patch Watch column on WindowsSecrets.com and on her blog at www.sbsdiva.com. Welcome, Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you again.
And for the folks who haven't taken the hint, we're going to talk about update services today. And I didn't realize this when we talked to you also long ago about SBS, that obviously Windows Update is a favorite of yours.
It's one of those, you know, you love to hate it and you hate to love it. It is on the box. As I said earlier, or as you said in the start of the show, I've been patching boxes since Code Red NIMDA days, where I'd slam my Mountain Dew can down on the desk and go running madly to the server telling everybody to save because I'm about to reboot the server midday.
Right.
Fortunately, it's gotten better since then. That was back in the days when Microsoft would release patches at any point in time, at any day of the week, and it was like, oh, gee, what's that? Oh, my gosh. Everybody get off and save.
We were patching wasn't cool.
And we had no patching tools. I mean, we literally... and that's actually why I've been a longtime customer of Shavelix, which is a third-party patch tool, because I had no patch tools. And then first came Sus, and by the way, I should say that we should put in a plug for some better marketing people to write better code names for these patch tools that they have at Microsoft, because they're not the greatest in the world as far as calling these patching tools. It was first called Sus, Software Update Services. It's now called WSUS. Some people call it WUS or WSUS, or I have no idea exactly what the official wording is. It's just Windows Software Update Services. And it basically is it's a free download. You can augment it there are some third-party products and programs out there that take it to a higher level, meaning that you can put in your own patches and you can roll up your own third-party stuff.
Yeah.
I tend to buy a standalone third-party tool called Shavelix that patches for everything else. But basically, WSUS patches the core products of Windows. Obviously, it does Windows operating system itself. And then on top of that, it does Exchange, with the exception of Service Pack. Like, for example, it does not do Exchange 2007 Service Pack 2. That's a service pack that needs some prerequisites. And some a little bit of reading of a KB, you know, things that we don't normally do as geeks, you know, we kind of try to not do that.
What is this reading thing you're talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we only read 140 characters at a time these days, I think. So that's what's built into our DNA.
Nice.
So Exchange 2007 Service Pack 2 is not in with SES. So that's why that KB article 894199, you can also get to, my cheater way of getting to it is if you Google on with SES space SES content, that's WSUS space SUS space content, Google hits it first hit all the time. So that KB article is your Bible of what WSUS handles. And if WSUS, if it's not listed there, it's not going to come down on your machine. So what you do is you install this platform on a server. It needs IIS to be running on that server.
Right.
All of the workstations then get set up through group policy. There's actually a couple of ways you can do this. It's easier in a domain. In a domain where you've got group policy, you can go up to the group policy settings and say, go talk to this WSUS server. Mm-hmm. It pushes out the group policy. They all talk in, and they all grab their patches from that server. So you don't have, like, 100 different workstations all grabbing the Microsoft updates all at the same time.
Right.
And if you pay, like, if you're overseas and you pay by the bit for the download, that can be pretty expensive if you've got 150 machines all getting the same patch pulling it in. WSUS pulls it in one time. Your workstations then point to that WSUS server. They then have to only pull it. They pull it down from your central location. You host the patches, if you will.
You also get to exercise control there, right?
Exactly. If you're a control freak, it's the ultimate in nirvana because you are the controlling of the patches of the network. You say who's going to get them. You say what they're going to get. You can approve. You disapprove. Like, for example, there are still 400 million Vista language updates that are sitting on my WSUS unapproved because I'm sorry, I don't need Bora Bora language on my Vista workstation,
right,
so I'm
exactly.
not going to approve it. Same way with the Windows 7, and you have to have the new Windows, you have to have WSUS 3 Service Pack 2 on your networks in order to support the Windows 7s, but you do the same thing for the Win 7s. If you don't want them to have the 400 trillion different language packages on there, you don't approve it up on the server.
Right.
You can also do this if you're in a work group where you don't have a domain. You can actually push out a registry key to off the domain workstation so that they've been, what you do is you set up your WSUS to publish externally. You open up some ports out there and you have it pushing out externally. And then you have your workstations out there pointing up to your master server, and again, you can control them that way.
Cool.
I won't get into the legalities of the licensing. If you're a smaller firm, you have to look into what's called SPLAL licenses. This is when I tell people to take two aspirins, drink a beer, go call a licensing expert, because it gets down that messy road of, oh gosh, let's call those licensing people. But it can be done if you need to host and push out patches for other people too.
Gotcha.
But most people get this services through their volume licensing agreement.
You don't even have to have a volume licensing agreement. WSUS is actually a free download. As long as you've got a server that can handle this beast on it, you can go to Microsoft, and I believe it's Microsoft. I should have looked that up ahead of time. I believe it's Microsoft / WSUS, and just download it for free. So as long as you've got a server 2003... server 2008 license. Server 2000 doesn't support WSUS 3.
Right.
Also, too, for those people that are still running SUS or WSUS 2, both of those are unsupported at this time. So if you're running those older platforms, please get up to WSUS 3. But basically, as long as you've got a server license, you're good to go.
Right.
But you don't even need volume licenses, you know, retail, OEM, you name it. You can download the WSUS product and put it on your server. Now, the only caveat I will say, we're getting pretty good at patching Windows stuff. The bad guys know this. The bad guys are starting to go after other stuff, like Java, like Flash, like QuickTime, and WSUS natively does not patch that. So all WSUS does is the Microsoft platform and the Microsoft stack. So that's why if you really want to secure your network with patches, you need to either look at a third-party product that plugs in and allows you to add them, or you need to get a lot more intense into Swift scripting than I am, or you need to do what I've done is where I've chickened out and I've bought a third-party product that natively does support patching for iTunes and QuickTime and all those other third-party stuff. So I always look at it from this standpoint is I don't, you know, it takes some time to learn how to code and learn how to process these third-party patches. I don't have the time, so I pay other people to have that time so that I'm freed up and do other things.
Right.
So it just depends on where your priorities are and what your budget is. You can do this yourself. People can push out patches via scripting and things like that. But if you're not that kind of people, or you don't have the time, there's vendors and companies out there that code up these things so that you don't have to do that. So.
What are the primary differences between versions 1, 2, and 3? If I'm running, you know, one of the past versions, toss a couple carrots out there, dangle them in front of me. Why should I be making the move?
The main thing that right now you want to make sure that you're on WSS 3 Service Pack 2 is Windows 7. And who isn't excited about Windows 7 right now? And if you've got a network where you already have an existing patching system like either SUS or with SUS, you aren't going to see those 7 patches being offered up to you. So my main carrot for getting you guys, anybody on with SUS 3 Service Pack 2 is being able to support and protect those Windows 7 machines. The first one, SUS, flat out isn't supported at all anymore. So if you've got any issues at all and you call into Microsoft or you go into a forum at Microsoft, they're going to say, dude, that is way old. You need to get yourself up on a supported version. Same way with WSS 2, the prior version. That, as of April of 2009, you're going to see where you're not going to see some patches coming out because it's not getting the detection updates that it needs. So just from a flat out, you aren't going to get the patches you need because you're not on a supported platform anymore. That's why you need to get up to with WSS 3 Service Pack 2. The other thing that I like from it is it has built-in tools now. With WSS 2, you always had to Google up this with WSS Wiki entry called Mowing the Grass. Let me explain what that whole concept is. When you have a WSS server, and you've got a pretty active network of a mixture of different operating systems and different platforms, you start to build up a database of patches up on that WSS database. It's a SQL database that keeps track of this stuff. And after a while, you kind of go, that's getting pretty big out there. And now that these workstations have those patches, you don't need them anymore. So you need to mow the grass.
Right.
So in the past, there was this wiki entry that you had to go through and do these commands and all this kind of stuff. And now in WSS 3, there's actually a button right inside the interface that is a cleanup tool wizard. Really great for keeping your WSS kind of trimmed down and not too fat. So you go in there, and usually if you've never done it before, you go into that tools console interface, you go into the cleanup tools, and you want, there's like about 5 or 6 different cleanup steps. And the very first time you've done it, if you've never ever done it before, you want to do each one at a time. Because especially in a small business network, if you do them all at once, it'll just grind that server to a halt because it's trying to do too much all at the same time. So you want to make sure that you do just one at a time. So you run one, make sure that completes, do the next one, make sure that completes. The other thing that we always recommend that you do is you uncheck drivers. The golden rule of thumb in patching in general is to kind of use that update window when it says, oh, you need a driver for such and such. Oh, you need a driver for this. Kind of look at that as just a suggestion. Don't look at that as, oh, you must install this, because it's getting better, but for the longest time, if you installed a driver off of Microsoft Update, there was a really good chance that you'd be banging your head against a wall going, why did I do that, because I just blue screened or did this or something isn't working and now I have to roll back. So I always look at the driver window as a suggestion. I don't look at it as mandatory. And especially the way they currently publish up drivers, there's notoriously been evenings when we get like 4,000 drivers of a different manufacturer in one night and we're going like, oh my word. So we uncheck the driver category in the WSS section in the classifications. because I don't want drivers to be pushing down through with us. So I uncheck it. It puts a lot of storage on the server that I don't need. So that's one of my cardinal rules is when you go into the WSS console, there's two settings. One is products. The other side is classification. We always leave products as fully checked, all products, even if we don't have all products inside of our network. Like, for example, I don't have BizTalk inside my network. I barely even know what BizTalk is. But I check the box all products because I want to make sure that as I bring new systems into my network, that WSS will automatically detect it and say, oh, you need a patch for this. So if I suddenly decide tomorrow, I really need BizTalk for some unknown reason, and no, I don't mean to diss all of the BizTalk consultants and users in the marketplace, but I just love to pick on that particular product. But if I suddenly bring that product into the network, if I don't have all products selected, I might forget that I don't have that box checked, and I might not get the patches for that particular product if I don't have all products selected. So some people usually go through and they go, well, gee, I don't have that, so I'm going to uncheck the all products and I'm going to just check the servers and the workstations I have, which is fine as long as you remember that if you bring anybody new in, you make sure you go back and revisit that screen. Because if you forget to go check that box, let's say you bring in a brand new Windows 7, and let's say you're already on WSS 3 Service Pack 2, you're going to find that that 7 is not being detected because you haven't checked that box up on that console. So on the all product side, I always leave that box checked because it's detecting, not pushing. The other side of the column is classification. And the one that I always leave unchecked is, like I said, the drivers, because they can be kind of fat and take up a lot of room, so we uncheck that. I do leave the rest. I also have the network set up so it does not automatically approve. I approve. Again, control freak. You can just go to town on this. You make it so you set it up so that nothing automatically gets installed. The reason why you're installing WSS in the first place is because you want control. So you can then set, okay, and especially on servers, you may make the decision that it's okay on workstations or categories of workstations to get automatic updates. But in general, I like to have absolute control over the servers. So I detect, I do not have it approving. So I go in and approve. The other big issue that some people have with WSS, it is not a push now patching platform. It is a detection. It is the clients and the servers go up to WSS and they pull down the patches. So when you go in there and you say, okay, detect patches, and when you give that approval, it may be up to 24 hours before that patch actually gets on the system. So it's not an immediate go out there push now. And you can set up some scripts and things and some ways to say, okay, at this time at 3 o'clock in the morning, make sure you go out to detect, and if there's anything out there at this time, go install, reboot the box, and go on. We also tend to, again, you have to kind of set up your network accordingly. If you're like me, I leave my computers on at the office 24/7, including the workstations. That's not the greatest and greenest in the world. I'm trying to work on that. But it also allows me to have detection windows for WSS in the middle of the night so that I'm not patching 8 to 5. So all of my patching stuff is done between the hours of like about 2 and 4 in the middle of the night so that it doesn't interfere with our workday. Again, I'm kind of struggling a little bit with the green scenario because obviously that's not the greenest, eco-friendly. I'm not saving energy, so I'm trying to revisit that and kind of work around that a little bit. But sometimes you have to kind of balance how can I protect as well as how can I be, efficient at the same time. So it's something I'm struggling with personally.
Your points about the ability to exercise that control. If you work in an environment, for example, where maybe you run custom applications or, non-Microsoft applications for business critical purposes, it doesn't happen often. Well, in a happy world, it doesn't happen often. But you start pushing out patches without testing against your applications on the server and on the workstation sometimes too. You could end up in a I can't do business type of situation.
And that's it. We have, even in a small, cause I get this question a lot, it's like, how can you do this even in a small network? How can you have like a test lab?
Yeah.
The big firms have actual test labs. Well, how can you do this in a little firm? And I do a process that I call the canary test. If you remember the old story of canaries in a coal mine, they would take canaries down in the coal mine, and as the air down there got bad, if the canaries, if you know, little Tweety Bird died, everybody knew that the air down here is getting really bad. We need to vacate immediately.
Yeah.
So we have two workstations in the office, myself and another gentleman, that get the, we actually manually go to Microsoft Update. We manually get the patches on our workstation. We, what I call bake for about a day or two, making sure that everything's okay with our line of business apps.
Mm-hmm.
If both of us say, yeah, it looks good, thumbs up, then I approve them on the server. And as far as server patches are concerned, I have a, and it's easier, it's way easier now. Back in the good old days of hardware, where you had to buy additional hardware in order to have some kind of test network.
Yeah.
These days you can stand up virtual boxes.
Right.
So VMware, Hyper-V, Virtual PC, you name it. Just throw more RAM into workstations, build a box that has lots of RAM, stand up a Hyper-V, stand up a VMware, and build yourself a little network of the same kind of, and buy TechNet Plus.
Yep.
Greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yep.
Because that is, can be used for testing. And you build a, you mimic your network at the office. You know, obviously you don't have to build out an exact replica, but you get, you know, you can get it close. And these days too, you can also, you can take a system state restore and actually suck the DC information, the Active Directory information. So, you know, you can get as identical as you want to spend the time, money, energy, effort, you name it, and test those patches in a lab situation first before you then go out and do it on your reel. The other way you can do it is you can wait for somebody else to be stupid and do it first. There's a listserv at www.patchmanagement.org. If you go to that page, there's a list archives and a list sign up. There's always consultants and users and big firms that say, hey, I installed this. It did this to my machine. Are you seeing this too? A recent one that occurred that nailed a lot of us was in the October patches, the month of October, which was the largest patch month Microsoft ever had, that also, mm-hmm. jokingly, we called it the longest patch Tuesday because it was the patches that never died. They kept coming back and being re-released over right. and over again. Initially, when that came out, there was a crypto patch, and I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it absolutely nailed the office communication servers. The minute you put it on any live communication or office communication server, the minute you rebooted the box, you had no instant messenger inside of your office.
It nailed it. Not good.
Just totally died. And the word got out pretty quickly on that list was that was the offending patch. Take it back off, and reboot your box, and you'll be fine. Also via that list, I got word that, oh, here's the fix got released. I did not hear about that from Microsoft Security Bulletins. I didn't see it on their blog. I didn't see it on any other place. That community word of mouth was, number one, what alerted us to the problem, and number two is what got us to the information that, oh, gee, there's a fix out there.
Right.
I would not have known about either one without community resources. So absolutely, if you can empower your firms and your bosses, and I know this is hard sometimes, some larger firms have issues with sharing information. It's totally understandable. But if you can also empower your boss to see the power of sharing of information, like what hurts in patches, and if they can empower you to sign up with an alias, like a Gmail account, and lurk on that list, and when you in your firm have an issue, and especially with when it's a line of business application, if you can say, hey, we're seeing this, just a heads up, FYI, it helps us all. I mean, the bad guys share information, the good guys should share information too. And especially when we can find out very quickly after Patch Tuesday that, oops, this one is hurting. Oops, let's get a call into Microsoft and figure out what's going on. Why is this doing this? Because the last thing you want to do is roll back a patch. Because obviously the bad guys now have that patch. They can start reverse engineering it and figuring out how to attack you. So you try to keep the patches on as much as you can, but sometimes when they hurt, you have to do, there's no other choice, you have to roll them off. So then you try to look to, okay, you know, what mitigations can I have? Now that this is off, how bad is this, you know? So this is where that sharing of information is key because, you know, if we know, oh, that hurts, okay, somebody call into Microsoft, let's get this, you know, let's let them know how big this is, and let's get this fixed as soon as we can.
And where's this site that everyone is, that's using WSUS is focused?
Patchmanagement.org. P-A-T-C-H management.org. There's actually two listservs. One is on patches in general. The other one is specifically on WSUS. So if you have administrative issues with WSUS, if you have questions about deployment, about setting up, there's two listservs on that site, www.patchmanagement.org. Like I said, one is specifically on patch issues, and the other one is more targeted right on WSUS, installing, deploying, setting it up, you name it. And like I said, there's a whole bunch of us that we, you know, and also it's really helpful sometimes when you've got a unique line of business application and you've installed something and you go, okay, I'm seeing this. Is anybody else? And if somebody comes back saying, no, we've got the same basic setup, but we don't have that line of business application and we're not seeing it, you kind of go, okay, that's telling, it allows you to kind of focus more into what the trigger is.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you know that, okay, it's not just the patch, it's the interaction of that patch with my thing.
Right. And that's when you know you're sitting on a unique piece of knowledge now. If everybody's broken, then fine. But if it's just you now, what's unique about you? Or even better, is now two or three people come back and say, yes, I am having that problem, but a bunch of other people aren't. And now you can start comparing, okay, what's similar about us that's different about them?
Exactly.
I'd like to go back just to reflect on your point about using a virtualized environment to be able to do a test lab. Back in the day and trying to deal with patch management and the first version of SUS and then the first updates that came out, I spent a lot of time, and some of the people that I was working with spent a lot of time learning a lot about patching, but also about virtualization because it was a new tool, relatively speaking, that was available. For people that have not touched, you know, software update services or WSUS and who have not yet played with virtualization, it's really this is sort of a perfect, low risk, easy to do, won't take too much time type of environment to set up using the tools that are available, like you say, through TechNet Plus, in order to really learn about all of the above, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how I would keep up with patches these days without a virtual environment because it allows me, the other thing, it allows me to have a baseline. I have two servers in my Hyper-V environment. One is my more like my real box at the office. The other one is my clean, pristine, nothing extra third party added to it at all.
Yep.
And so sometimes you need this, okay, what's baseline? What's the normal settings on a box? What's the normal stuff? There's nothing third party on that. And I use that as my sanity check of going, okay, that installed just fine. Nothing occurred. So, it's working just fine on a clean, pristine environment. It must be something unique to me over here.
Yeah.
I know, and if you, having used physical to virtual tools in the past to try to, sometimes you really have to actually replicate, you know, a service or a machine in your test environment, but there's lots of tools to make that relatively easy to do.
Absolutely. There's that recent one that Rasinovich came out that is a free P2V tool. The only issue that I've heard on that is it does not strip out the how. So therefore, again, using that lovely TechNet Plus subscription, and I'm going to massacre the name because I can never remember all the, I think it's SCVMM, I think. They have a lovely alphabet soup up there. There's a virtual machine manager.
Uh-huh.
If you go out to the virtual machine blog, and I can give some links. Oh,
I remember what you're talking about there. Yeah,
System Center Virtual Machine Manager.
And this is a tool for updating virtual machines with patches without actually sort of starting them.
But it also gives you a way in the R2 version that you can P2V. So if you, and it goes through VSS.
Right, and with the HAL abstraction, right?
Exactly. It pulls out the HAL, so you can take, let's say you want to have an exact duplicate of your physical machine at the office, and you want to pull that out of, pull the HAL out so you can then plop it onto a Hyper-V box and set up a test network. You can use that SCVMM, and I think it's the R2 version that does this, that pulls out the HAL layer so you can virtualize, and it won't blue screen a death on you when you go, oh, great, that didn't work.
Is the resultant, what I pull out of there, called the abstracted hardware abstraction layer?
Yes.
That's what it should be called.
That's it.
It's the
it's not the I'm sorry, HAL, you can't do that. Yes. It's not the robot that tells you you can't do that. Yes. It's basically, it's pulling out the specific information so that when you move it from environment to environment, that when the system boots back up again, it doesn't go, I don't know what this hardware is, I'm going to blue screen on you. So if you take that out and it moves in virtualization, then it's a happy camper. So.
What's one more thing that people should know about WSS that they probably don't know today?
One more thing that they should know. I think one more thing that they should know is that if they don't have it, they need it. I always look at it, there are times that I use it as a sanity check against my third-party tools and vice versa. There's a rule in security, trust but verify. If you only have one patching mechanism, sometimes it's wrong.
Right.
Sometimes WSS is wrong, sometimes third-party tools are wrong. It is always wise to have some other thing to go and say, you say I'm patched, but when I use this other tool over here, I'm not patched. Why is that?
Right.
And it's always in the figuring out who's right and who's wrong that you go, okay, I wasn't as locked down as I thought I was. I was missing stuff. So my thing that I tell people is, even if you think you don't need it because you've got something else, give it a try. You might be surprised as there's patches that WSS detects that nobody else offers up, and vice versa. Sometimes WSS, if you are using WSS, randomly take a workstation. Go out to secunia.com, S-E-C-U-N-I-A.com, and there's a online scanner tool that you can run on a desktop, and make sure what you think you're being patched is what you're being patched. Because sometimes Secunia will come back and say, you're missing this and this and this. So I'd say trust but verify.
Susan, great talking to you about Windows update services. It's one of those things that I think a lot of folks are using without really understanding, and the other half don't even know it's there.
And it's free.
And it's free, so go get it.
Free is free. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.